This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest Short Shots. This is the podcast where me and Rich take an exclusive look at some recent short films. This is a little bit different to the way we usually do it. Usually, Richard would scour his collection of short films that he's seen over the past couple of months, and he'll put together a list of the ones he feels are the best to be talking about. This is a little bit different because we've been provided with the latest set of short films which are being showcased on the Arrow streaming network. Very well-vaulted video label. I've got quite a few of their films myself. I'm sure you have too, Rich. You've probably collected over the years.
I haven't actually.
Really?
No, I don't. I don't really buy DVDs, and well, if I do buy DVDs, it's not the kind of stuff that Arrow put out generally. So no, actually, I don't think I own a single Arrow disc. But yeah, this is quite. It's nice to go back to. We're doing this is a bit more like when we've covered the Etheria shorts on Shudder. Yep. So yeah, it's interesting. We've never done an Arrow episode before, so really interested to dive in and see what sort of stuff that Arrow is giving.
Absolutely. So it is an interesting bunch. I do have a few favorites. Some of it feels very typical of what a sort of layman's idea of a short film is, or how it's presented, but we'll get into that in a second anyway. So we've got, I believe, 10 shorts to look at.
I think it's 11 or
12 actually. 12, yeah.
12, yeah.
There you go, 12. And we're going to dive straight in. So the first film we're going to look at is called Arm. In this one, a woman suffering from loneliness during lockdown orders a device to soothe her sleep. It's not surprising that we've got a lockdown short amongst this sort of thing. We've covered loads of films, feature films, which are very clearly made during COVID. You know, the lockdown period, the very minimal casts, that sort of thing. Not many that actually address lockdown, though, and its effects, which is what this does. So we have a woman in this one who is self-isolating in a flat and is slowly going insane as a result. She's sort of, she is suffering from loneliness, a bit of paranoia. She hears things on the radio which seem to be aimed at her and taunting her and this sort of thing, and she ends up buying this cuddly arm from Amazon or somewhere to sort of something to cuddle, something to soothe her while she's sort of lying in bed, except things don't go the way they should because it's a short horror film. And chaos ensues. What do you make of this one, Rich?
Yeah, I thought it was all right. So it's just under 10 minutes. The initial concept's quite interesting. It's got the mental state of the sole character in the story is starting to unravel with this, like you say, the broadcast that they're listening to suddenly become kind of personalized, and they don't really seem phased by this particularly. So that something's amiss. The stuff that, I don't know if we want to go into it, but the stuff that starts to happen with the arm is it's definitely a film that sort of set the tone, I would say, for the films that would follow, which was that there was a lot more that would have elements of comedy than I was expecting. I was expecting much more of a kind of a, I mean, we've had this before with other lineups, you know, you kind of expect kind of straight horror. I mean, with when we've covered the Etheria stuff, those films, which are collectively female filmmakers, which this one is also, but those films are, they vary into different genres and stuff. And rather than just being horror, and they're shown on the Shudder Channel, whereas this is, you know, again, Dan, the expectation, the anticipation is that Arrow is kind of associated with horror, and it is, but there's a lot of humor in this, and some of the others that are going to follow. Well, a lot of the ones that are going to follow, actually.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
so yeah, I thought it was quite interesting that good, you know, single setting, you know, varying up the location, varying up the, you know, the scenery. I mean, there's some scenes where the main character is outdoors, so there's more people around. I was a bit curious because she's looking outside and she's seeing people masked up,
Yeah.
but then when she goes outside, she's not wearing a mask, and I was wondering what that tells us about her character. But none of the other people seem to be wearing masks, so I don't know if
Yeah.
I'm reading too much into that or whatever. Because this was probably the point where, you know, you were allowed to leave for
Yeah.
exercise, kind of thing, but still masks and stuff were encouraged. But say I might be looking too much at that, but the yeah, all the stuff that happens towards, I'd say that's probably the second half, the latter part,
Yeah.
which is the sort of core of the of why it's called Arm. I thought that was quite fun, works quite well. Yeah, it was all right. Yeah.
It's a good one, and it does sort of play with your expectations because it's, you know, it sets up this woman with that sort of level of paranoia and isolation. So you know, going into that second half, you're not sure if what's happening is just her
Yes. Yeah.
or
Yeah.
if it's something else, you know, and the way it builds up is very good. So yeah, we're off to a cracking start. We won't be scoring these shorts, but we do recommend you check them out. Most of the well th these are all available on Arrow, as we said. If you're a subscriber, some of them probably will turn up on Vimeo and YouTube at a certain point, so we certainly recommend you check out Arm if you can. Next up is Bad Acid. Set during the 1980s, our protagonist wakes to conduct her morning aerobics exercise, only to fall foul to a toxic chemical which get mixed up in her morning soda. Her morning soda, for God's sake. How what could be more 80s than swigging a tab while doing your aerobics? This is incredibly manic, this one.
Yes. Yeah.
This
A lot
is
of
very
energy.
You could say that. This is certainly a Marmite one. I can see certain people, you know, possibly getting turned off by it. It is very much in your face. It's a bad acid trip, is what you're faced with. And it is pretty freaky. But there's this sort of over the top sort of grotesqueness to the whole thing anyway. You know, all the makeup is highly exaggerated. You know, even before she goes crazy, it is very interesting, but it's yeah, it's very much in your face.
Yeah, it's more like you know, there's no narrative to speak of. It's one of those kind of experiential kind of shorts where, you know, it's almost like a music video, really. I mean, that's the closest thing I would compare it to,
Yeah.
would be like if it was you know, if crank up, if there was like a key. So, I mean, there is music in it, there's different pieces. But if it was more like, you wouldn't have to tweak it too much to make it a music video of, you know, about that song, and you've just got kind of
Yeah.
the aerobics kind of stuff in there. So yeah, I think that's, I mean, it's really garishly colored, you know, lots of numbers. It reminded me a bit of some of the Monstrous Femmes movie films that we've covered, that say that same kind of aesthetic, the sort of you know, the central female character, the, you know, the colors, and you know, the sort of the retro feel of the whole thing. So yeah, this is written and directed by filmmaker Sam Fox, who has a number of other credits. I thought this was quite interesting. I'd be interested to check out. So, did there's another one called I'm gonna have to. It's a bit awkward to pronounce this one. Book and Nuts, basically,
All right.
is the new one. That's which I have seen a couple of posts about. So that could be quite an interesting one to check out as well in the near future. I think that's on the festival circuit at the moment. So we were saying a minute ago about some of these shorts. Perhaps they're on Arrow, but perhaps they're available in other places. This is a perfect example because as we've gone to record this. This particular short is on Alta now
Oh, okay.
on
Right.
YouTube. It's
Yeah.
literally just been premiered as we speak to on there. So if you're not on Arrow, there is an option to go and check it out. So it is quite an experience.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah, do check out Bad Acid. Next up is Bark. And this is one of my favorite ones, I have to say. So in this one, a sentient tree wishes for some excitement in its life and gets more than it bargained for. So I you know, at first I didn't know what to make of this, and at the beginning, it's a bit difficult to figure out who the narrator is, because the last person you would expect is a tree. There's a guy walking his dog, that sort of thing going on. So I thought it would be something to do with that. But no, and then you get this incident that happens, and it is just crazy. It is quite a unique perspective, I think, is you wouldn't expect it, and I think it works really well. I thought it was quite funny. What do you make of this one, Rich?
Yeah, I liked it a lot as well. Once it actually gets into its rhythm and you know what it's doing, it sort of plays its hand, as it were. It's black and white. It's got this kind of quirky comedy kind of feel to it, throughout the whole thing. The tree is sort of pondering and saying, just sort of rambling to wandering to itself, kind of. It's just talking like a regular guy, basically. It's like a quite a almost like a Woody Allen tree or something. It's quite a neurotic tree,
Neurotic tree.
and he's trying to read one of the things I like best was that he's trying to get the attention of Carl,
Carl had put
who's
the shrub, and he just
yeah
played his
who
house music.
Yeah, he's got like techno going on,
That's
and they keep coming back to this, and that actually even comes back right on the end credits, because there's like two or three like end mid post credit kind of bits all sort of happening into it, and Carl does make an appearance at the end. So there's one criticism I've got is that there's a thing going on with someone being attacked with a certain implement. Say we're going to try and sort of dance around this a little bit because these films are so short, you really don't want to spoil anything. So this one is 6 minutes long, and somebody's being attacked with an implement, and the person who is attacked has no related wounds, essentially. So it's like, from what you've seen,
Oh, there should be
you
nothing
should,
left. Yeah.
or there should be at least some some makeup effects that would represent that, whereas it's like literally it looks like nothing's happened to them.
Not
So
really.
there's a disconnect there, which bugged me just ever so slightly. But apart from that, that's my own criticism. A good work from Ryan Irving, so I think he's the writer director of this one. He's also the tree,
The tree, yeah.
the voice of the tree. And say again, this like a lot of the films we're going to be talking about, made with very limited resources, very small teams. This one is, it has, only a handful of people in it, same as the previous two films we talked about. They all involve maybe, two or three people maximum. Other films we're going to talk about, you'll see more, but for the most part, you're working with these very limited constraints. And I thought the black and white was interesting because it didn't feel like it needed to be in black and white, especially the genre that it was ultimately aligning itself to, or commenting on, or it's sort of drifting towards the which is a subgenre, let's say, that's associated with black and white. But I whereas maybe something like a yeah, there's more classic horrors that would have, they could have gone that route. So they've kind of mixed it up. They've kind of gone for something that looks like it could be 30s, 50s, you know, 50s,
yeah.
you know, low budget horror, but with a more of a contemporary subgenre kind of thing. So yeah, a bit of a genre mashup. Or subgenre mashup, I should say. Yeah, definitely worth a look. Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, this one I really did enjoy. And next up is Bleep. A husband and wife awaken in the middle of the night to a strange bleep coming from their kitchen. I was lucky enough to see this last year as part of Mayhem. It was part of their shorts showcase. It went really well. Yeah, I mean, it is very funny. It's a great setup, and the you know, when it flips to the other perspective, yeah. I thought that was really, really good. It's just, you know, it's got this sort of bittersweet ending as well, but it works really well. You know, it all the information you need to understand what's going on is there on the screen. You know, it just works really well. How do you find this one?
Yeah, I really liked it as well. I'd say it's another one with, you know, it's a domestic situation. It's a couple, but a lot more dialogue driven than a couple of the other, well, than many of the others. You know, it's this, say, bickering couple that they're hearing the noise and they're going to check it out. And the dialogue's really good between the couple. Very
realistic.
You get drawn into their characters and stuff, but very quickly. It's only 8 minutes long, but you kind of thing. And yeah, I thought that it played its hand really well. When the story takes a turn. And that was really clever, very well executed. I thought it was, you know, a lot of fun. Very, it's good. Really, like, you can see this sort of thing as being like something you might see as a like BBC Two, or maybe not. Mm-hmm. I don't know if BBC Two does much comedy these days. But back in the day, you know, you would watch a 9 o'clock comedy or something on like a thing. Or even like a, something like that. I would say it's definitely got that sort of edgier humor to it. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you might see on a BBC Two or a Channel 4 that I thought would appeal to a lot of people. So yeah, I would definitely recommend that one. It's made by Ben S. Highland, it's well worth checking out.
Absolutely. Next up is Itch. Okay, this is one of the more icky ones. This one did make my skin crawl a lot. A novice nun suffers from an extreme itchiness, which may be a manifestation of her sexual frustration. So this poor nun, this novice young woman, has this, you know, incessant itch that she can't stop scratching. And of course, the more she scratches, the worse it gets. It's pretty skin crawling, this one. How did you find it, Rich?
I think the another, like, say, quite a few, like we've talked about Bad Acid, and actually the closest thing to this would be Bark, because this is a black and white film as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a very, you know, the aesthetics of the cinematography and the way it looks and everything is key.
Yeah.
This is very much classical style. Mm-hmm. It's in a 4x3 frame. I was getting like a. I know that's probably not a good. Well, it might be a good example. I don't know, like a Powell Pressburger kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. It's on a. It's a body horror kind of story. Say set in a convent. Yeah, it's really, because it was made in 2021, but it feels like it's something that could perhaps be older. You know, it's got a real authentic mm-hmm. feel to it, and yeah, it gets pretty grim as it goes along. Say, so it's only another one that's about less than 10 minutes, about 8 minutes long. It's from Malta, interestingly, but it is in
Ah,
English.
yeah.
There's only one of the film. There's only one film I think that we're going to be talking about today that is not in English, which was quite surprising. But the but yeah, this is a Maltese one, and I'm not sure whether they filmed it there or is, I'm not sure. But again, small cast, really good cast of unknowns, not familiar with them. Everyone was, really good. Especially obviously our lead character, which I think is that was it Sister Jude,
I think so, yeah.
Lauren O'Dea. Yeah, so definitely really interesting. If you like your art, if you like your horror films a bit more arty maybe, and a bit more say ideas driven and challenging and sort of
Definitely a challenging one, yeah.
yeah, this isn't, say we talked about, comedy being a constituent part of a lot of the films that we talked about. Well, this is the one that doesn't.
Yeah,
This is one of a few that doesn't. There's no comedy here whatsoever.
no, this is definitely a disturbing one, that's for sure. Yeah, but definitely worth checking out for sure. That's Itch. Next is Keith. Now, this is another short one.
Very short one, this one.
Very short one. A young girl has a chat with the monster living under her bed, who happens to be called Keith. I like this again. I thought this, this is all about the sound design more than anything, and the way that that the monster under the bed is presented. The only issue I have is I felt it rushed its ending, so it rushed it so much that I kind of missed the punchline. I don't know about you.
I think it's. I think because it's only 3 minutes long, I think about 2.5 minutes long actually. It's like get it's kind of getting into its stride, and the turning point, and it's one of those where the conclusion sort of twist at the end, or the turning point, so is where you think, oh, something's going to happen now, but then it doesn't because it's like it's time to finish it already. It's like, and it's a bit disappointing in that sense. But
Yeah, I agree.
I like the idea. It's very much up to you. It's all about, like you say, the sound and stuff. There's not really much to that. There's no well, without wishing to spoil it, you don't see a lot. Let's just say that you don't see much. But it reminded me, there's various films that we've seen, but over the years about children and horror situations and stuff, whether that's Poltergeist or The Gate and various things, but children in horror sort of situations is quite common too. And this reminded me a little bit of there was the film recently, I think it was called Lights Out in the end, but it was based on a short called Larry, which is another one, because again this whole idea of imaginary friends and stuff like that is kind of being developed. Actually there was a it was a Blumhouse film recently, which was kind of it was called Imaginary. It was about imaginary.
That's right,
And this is kind of sort of working in that wheelhouse of, is it figment of her imagination? Is it something real? But it's quite playful. Again, humor's there right in the title. I mean, having a monster who says his name is Keith is a funny thing. And I did quite like the sort of where it was going. It's just like I wanted to see it go there rather than that just be kind of a sort of little sort of twisty, sort of the conclusion thing. But yeah, interesting, well made. But there's not a lot to it, but yeah,
Not a lot to it.
definitely worth checking out.
Absolutely. Now, talking about young girls meeting monsters,
Yes.
next up is Meat Friend. When young Billy microwaves some hamburger meat, she creates a creature called Meat Friend who has some very dodgy lessons for her to learn. We talked about bad acid. This is like Sesame Street on acid, basically, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy. This creature who keeps referring to Billy as children, hello children, is quite funny in itself. But then, trying to teach her how to make a prison shank and how to help people meet an accident and that sort of thing. It was all kind of crazy. Yeah, it's a weird one. It reminded me of that. Oh, what was that film we recorded about the girl who finds this demon alien? Was it?
This, do you know what's funny is that is literally the exact same reference that
Yeah,
I was going to make. Psycho Gorman.
Psycho Gorman, that was it. Yeah,
Yeah.
there is
Steve
that sort of
Kostowski, I
feel.
think.
Yeah, but
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. It's interesting that we both picked up on that. Exactly the same kind of vibe. You know, it's this bizarre situation, very dark humor, but it's got this kind of playfulness. It's made in a, again, like you say, you mentioned Bad Acid, but it's kind of this heightened retro kind of period. I mean, it's kind of an 80s sitcom that they're going for.
Yeah, with the credits and
And
everything at the beginning,
yeah.
it's set up like, I don't know, Charles in Charge or something like
And
that. Yeah.
the puppet is badly animated. So it's just like it barely moves at times. It's just going, so it's saying its lines. But it's hey, there's this interesting sort of contrast between this and Keith, because they're both kind of doing a similar idea but in a completely different way. So this is very much a film where you do see the meat friend, the girl's brilliant, she's great playing
Yes.
on. It's an eight, again another 8 minute one, from Izzy Lee. Really interesting. Yeah, anybody who's liked, Psycho Gorman or stuff like that, these kind of sort of retro twisted kind of comedy horror kind of things will really, I think, get a kick out of this.
Absolutely, yeah. This is a strange one. It's like if Cookie Monster was mixed with Stewie Griffin from Family Guy. You know, it's crazy.
I think Seth MacFarlane fans would
Yeah,
like it as well. Yeah.
exactly. It's sort of humor for sure. Anyway, that is Meat Friend. Next up is Smile. A manic depressive young woman is visited by a malevolent supernatural creature in the middle of the night. I thought this might have been linked to the feature film called Smile, but it's a completely different director and writer and everything. So yeah, it's just a bit of a coinkydink. You've got two films with a slightly similar idea. This is
Because the
probably
film that Smile, the feature film, was based on, wasn't called Smile, which is even more confusing.
Oh,
So, yeah, you could definitely see that there could be a potential connection here, but this kind of unravels in a little bit of a different way.
it does. And I would say this is probably the most straightforward sort of story. You know, it's got a start and finish, basically, you know. And the sort of the kicker in it is the fact that she's got this sort of very passive aggressive mum who's of the opinion of, you know, oh, just cheer up for God's sake, you know, and snap out of your depression. It's kind of thing, and just sort of really laying it on thick with the you know, the guilt and everything. And you know, you don't know if that's a factor in what happens, or you know, what is sort of called up this creature to visit her in the middle of the night. But it feels like one of those things. It's like a short story from like Vault of Horror or Creepshow or kind of thing, you know, where you got somebody says something and then the story sort of twists it and go, well, this is what you wanted, isn't it? You know, but you know, to an extreme horror level. Effects were really good in this one. We talked about effects before. This one does have really good makeup effects for its ending. It's pretty gruesome, but it works really well.
Yeah, it reminded me. There's a lot of these horror shorts and horror films or whatever, which are basically a vulnerable woman alone, having to deal with a situation or whatever. We talk on over on the DTV Digest main, on the main show, we talked about the short film Vice Grip recently, from Dylan Vibart, which was a very similar kind of idea. Say lots of people have used that comp, that sort of central setup. I thought it was quite I was a bit confused on the way some of the things held together on this one. It introduces the ideas, and again, which this is kind of a how reliable is the mental state of the protagonist? A
Indeed.
bit like going back to the film that we started with,
Yeah, arm,
Arm, yeah. And but the say the make I'd say the makeup effect, practical makeup effects are really good. This is from filmmaker Joanna Tsannis, who's got a number of other shorts out there that I'll be definitely curious to check out. Say this, it didn't blow me away, this one. I'll be fair, it didn't blow me away. I thought it was all right. I thought it was okay. I don't think it had quite the like coming off something like Meat Friend, which is so has its own very much its own identity, and something like Smile is good and it's well executed, but it's like one of those films that you go and see, it's like, yeah, it's good, it's all right, but I feel like it's all a bit familiar to what I've seen before. But
This could
that's
easily be, it could easily be the prologue to a Blumhouse film. It's that
oh
sort of
yeah
thing,
yeah definitely yeah
pre-credit sequence or something.
yeah you do wonder if it's like a proof of concept, and the idea is to maybe think, but this was made back in 2021. Let's say the filmmakers made quite a lot actually since then. Whether there was any idea to sort of spin this out or make it a bigger story, I'm not sure, but I do think there was that there needed to be a little bit more meat on the bone on this one.
Indeed. So there you go. That is a smile. Next up is Terrible Things. In the post-apocalypse wasteland, a young scavenger spends the night talking to the dead resident of a house. Again, a familiar setup. The lone scavenger sort of wandering the wasteland, in this case, a sort of fog-bound countryside, where she managed to come across this house, which has this corpse. I think it's like a suicide letter on his lap or something. And she ends up just talking to it, through the night, just to get through the night. It's not bad, and it does sort of have a bit of a payoff at the end, when we sort of get an idea of what's really out there in the fog. That works quite well. But again, it's just stuff we've seen before.
Yeah, it's this is an Irish film. I think it's yeah, it's the only one in the series. Most of the films that are on this selection are British, but there are, say, Bad Acid, for example, was from the United States. Bark was from Canada. And Meat Friend was American as well. But most are from the UK. So this is, say, Irish, which is quite interesting. Although it's not got an Irish identity. There will be a film later from another area which very much has its own identity. But this could have been made anywhere, really, I felt, which is fine. That's no problem. But the what I did think was interesting was how much it reminded me of Frank Darabont's The Mist, especially at the end. It's got a really atmospheric opening. I thought the monologue that was delivered was really good, really poignant, and say the last part where the go outside and you see something, which reminded me of a film we watched with I think it was Bella Ramsey. We watched a short, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was she was in a house I think with her dad, and she was left on her own, and then her dad had to go, and then. She was, yeah, her dad went out, and then she was left on her own, and then eventually she went outside, and then like the end of the film, it kind of reveals something. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, a similar kind of thing happening here, but very, very The Mist. I don't know if that's intentional, but it's like it was really, really close to that film, which It's a good
pulls it
reference
off.
point.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
does,
it does.
and
It
it pulls it
does.
off. So you're not left going, "Oh, look what they try to do." No, it's like, "Oh, actually, yeah, they did a good job
It's
of it."
something quite impressive. I mean, if you see the poster on IMDb, it's going to give it away completely. So maybe don't go looking for any information about it before you actually watch it. But yes, yeah, it's definitely got a vision that I can get behind.
Yeah, that is Terrible Things. Next up is probably the most avant-garde film on this list. It's called The Anatomy Maestro. On the dark New York streets, a killer stalks his latest victim, but there is more to his quarry than meets the eye. Heavily influenced by sort of the giallo films of the 70s, because we've got our we've got a masked killer with his leather gloves and his hat and trench coat, very much something from like Mario Bava's Blood and Black Lace, that sort of style, and even some early Argento sort of stuff.
Yeah. It's even got
But
Goblin on the soundtrack.
it's even got, yeah, and there's even this sort of, there's a bit of Maniac in there as well,
Oh, yeah.
and things like that, and then things just like go completely nuts after you get to a certain point of the film, and then it just goes apeshit, basically, as things don't turn out the way you expect. It's very interesting. It's all visual. There's no dialogue at all. But it does sort of do a good job of sort of telling this story. So you see what the motivations of the sort of various people are. And the ending's quite surprising as well. I was rather surprised at the fate of this particular person. So yeah, and the soundtrack, I must admit, I love the soundtrack, as crazy as it was very eclectic. Every time the scene changed, the music changed. So yeah, different tempos, different volumes, all sorts going on. But it kind of worked, it kind of all just about held together. How do you feel about this one?
Yeah, I think again, like Bad Trip, it was another one that really just made me think of Monstrous Femme because they've plowed this sort of furrow with their own, say, giallo influenced short
Yeah,
called Fanatico.
Fanatico,
I like some of the other films that we talked about. It really sells the authenticity of its aesthetic. You know,
yeah.
it's got this really grimy look to it, which
It
you know,
does look
it's
like New York in the
perfectly,
80s, yeah.
yeah, it
Look,
perfectly
yeah.
suits the films that it's referencing. I mean, we watched the film that was giallo influenced, you know, a feature film recently or last year, I think it was. I can't remember. The Last Matinee, I think it was called, or something like that.
Oh yeah,
And
that was that from Brazil or somewhere, wasn't
something like that.
it?
And
Yeah,
the,
that was great.
yeah, so this, so yeah, this is sells that, and it's kind of, you know, underestimating the quarry and, you know, tables turn kind of stuff happening. But it's all a bit weirder than you might even expect with that sort of thing. So yeah. I say not entirely my cup of tea, but I like it's a you know adventurous spirit. There was again there was another. Oh, I keep forgetting the names of these other short films that we watched. But there was one about an art student that we watched a while back,
Yes,
which had a
that's right.
very sort of wild kind of
That was one
thing
of the
going on.
Etheria ones, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think you're right. It
Yeah.
was, and that was again had that sort of manic sort of energy of what was happening. So yeah, this is interesting. Say The Anatomy Maestro is you know if you're into giallo you want to like a little like a little flavoring little taste you know so like a little throwback to that kind of era I think you're definitely going to enjoy this.
Yeah, absolutely. Next up, our penultimate film is The Monkey's Paw. A family is visited upon by an old acquaintance who leaves them with a cursed gift. So, the legend of the monkey's paw is quite well known. Careful what you wish for, all that sort of stuff. This is probably It does feel like something like Edgar Allan Poe,
Yes, I
but
agree.
in a sort of an English setting, with this family. It's turn of the century kind of, well, even earlier than that. It's sort of the local, the son works at the local mill, and the dad is visited in the middle of the night by an old army friend who's just got back from India, and he tells them about this monkey's paw and what it can do, and then he leaves them with it basically. And of course they make a wish, in jest, not really expecting anything to happen. But then the next day it does come true in probably the most horrific way for them. And then what happens following that, the way they use the other wishes, it's quite amusing and horrible. But it does remind me, because The Simpsons did a monkey's paw episode
Yes.
as part of their Treehouse of Horror. So it is pretty much in the, it's sort of contemporary sort of, I wouldn't say zeitgeist, but
Well,
it's common knowledge sort of thing.
I think Eva, isn't Jordan Peele's production company called Monkey's Paw as well, or something like
Oh, right, yeah.
that? But the
That's right.
recently backed the Monkey Man
Monkey Man, yeah.
film. That's where I remember it, because it's got like a monkey's paw with a teaspoon or something as the ident or something. Anyway, so this was, it's a sort of I've never read the story, but yeah, by all accounts, it appears to be a very faithful adaptation of W.W. Jacobs' story, which does feel in this incarnation at least, from what I've seen, it does. I agree with you on the Edgar Allan Poe kind of feel to it. This was made in partnership with Hammer, its contemporary incarnation, of course, because this is a modern production, but it's a period film, and I thought it looked really good. I thought the quality of the whole thing was great. The modest location and setting, whatever, very felt very, again, sort of very authentic of the period that it was going for. The cast of, people I'm not familiar with, I thought were really, really good. You get weird things like the strain, the old friend who comes with the monkey's paw. It's like, I wondered why he was even there or why he even brought it, because he was like, he wasn't like he was offering any enthusiasm or anything. He was just kind of,
No,
I don't know
just
if he
want to
was
get rid
looking
of
to,
it. You
yeah,
know,
it's looking to offload it or whatever. But yeah, he was definitely, you, it was like, why didn't he even turn up? But I think you're right. I think the whole point is, he's just trying to pass it on, although he seems like he doesn't want to pass it on. So it's almost like, well, what if you don't want to pass it on, why not just leave it out somewhere or whatever. Anyway, so it's like they were asking for trouble, but how much they're saying, maybe the story sort of delves into that possibly a bit more, but I thought it played well. I thought the leads, say the ensemble of actors, and the way it plays out, I was like, hope I was like, oh, I was looking for more, because it's the whole three wishes thing, and you think, oh, it could be a longer story, and it was like, it kind of starts to end really quickly, just as you want more to happen. But I think that is, from what I've read, quite a faithful rendering of how that story plays out. Great production value. It's made, say, it's the longest film on the list, nearly half an hour long. Very much feels like it could have been an episode of an anthology series or part of an anthology film, like an Amicus or whatever it was. Made by filmmaker Ben Kaplan, who's, say, adapted the story himself, and is also, meaning he's directed a couple of things before, but he's also an actor. Actually, directed a short called Kung Fu Action Chick
All right.
prior to this. That was 12 years earlier,
12
so that's
minutes earlier.
interesting. So yeah, big gap between his second directing and his most recent play. Most generally an actor. Who's appeared in things like Casualty, Silent Witness, Midsummer Murders, and I mean, on the evidence of this, very, definitely got a career, as a director of much more things ahead, because I think this was very, very polished, high quality production.
Absolutely. This, as you say, could easily be like an episode of Tales of the Unexpected or something like that. You know, it works for it very well. You can
There's
kind
a
of
show
see
that
where
could come back.
yeah,
Like,
absolutely.
why haven't they brought Tales of the Unexpected back? Or something? There's a reboot it. Sorry.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, that is The Monkey's Paw. And finally, we have, and I'm not sure I can pronounce this, but it is The Worm of Penbarras. I'm not going to attempt. Three men find themselves with a harrowing task deep in the Welsh valleys. This is actually my favorite of the lot. It sort of ties into one of my favorite sort of tropes of horror films, and that is the idea of like sort of, you know, good people having to do horrific things for the greater good. You know, it's that kind of scenario, but also it's just the banal and mundaneness of the situation. You know what I mean? It's three guys in a car, basically, for the most part. You know, they pick each other up and head off to do this thing. That valley they drive through, that is very reminiscent of where I was. A couple of weeks back, which was quite a harrowing drive along the sort of single lane, with a sort of sheer drop on one side, just going through this valley. Absolutely crazy sort of thing. But yeah, I just really liked it. I mean, we don't see anything really. You know, there's no special effects, there's no makeup or anything like that. It's just very well written, very well produced, and yeah, you just get this feeling of like, you know, for whatever reason they're having to do this thing. You don't know why they've been chosen to do it or anything. It's just something that is, you know, they have to do, and I just really liked it.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to this. It's got a very interesting but the title's quite intriguing, and I'd heard it was like folk horror kind of thing, so I was very intrigued on how it would be. I didn't understand what the title was, but the worm is, say, it's kind of a creature, but the Wulf Penbarras is the mountain pass region where they go to, which is what you were referring to there. I think the out of all the films which have, say, predominantly been, is almost, say, have been, apart from this, exclusively in the English language, except for those without any dialogue. But the I thought it was great to see. I don't think I've ever seen. I know there's Welsh, programs on. You can watch them on iPlayer from various channels or whatever. There are programs that are produced in Welsh, but I've never watched one. Even films that are made in Wales are usually in English, and so I thought that was really interesting. It gave a really unique feel to the whole thing. It's got a very classical, so it's kind of harkening back to 70s horror in it. So even from its opening credits, it's very much going for a sort of that 70s kind of. I think you summed it up. It's kind of like the banality of, something that's quite actually quite mundane, and it's not trying to be a big grand story. Something like The Witch in the Window came to mind, as where that was a film which was more about the characters and what they were facing rather than what the threat or the supernatural element actually was, although we did get more of that in there than this. But this is kind of a dread, sort of building up, and what on earth's going on, and you kind of get an inkling of what's happening, and it's a very classical kind of scenario, but like you say, it's kind of this detached sort of hope, like, oh, we got to do it again,
Yeah,
or kind of thing, or
exactly. Well, that's the
yeah.
thing. I mean, I think if anything, it need probably needed a bit more backstory, just a bit more, you know, how these people got chosen, what is the sign, you know, what was signaled to them that they have to do this thing, you know.
And what is that meaning? Because the whole kind of implication of you know, that we've got to do this thing again so soon indicates that it's building towards something. And you just don't, it's like, is this becoming more frequent? And what is the increase in frequency? What does that actually signal? Like you say, what is it that's sort of identified them to that they've got to do this in the first place and stuff? And how they deal with that, and the person who they have to go and collect, and
how they're chosen and that sort of
stuff. There's a lot of really interesting stuff here, and it doesn't really explore any of it, but it's very intriguing. And I thought, it kind of ends on a very much a note.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, we've done it now. You know, let's go back to our normal lives, sort of thing, until the next time we have to do this.
Yeah. And it's not something that's looking to satisfy any sort of typical horror expectations, which is, say, it's not for the first time on this list. You know, it's something that's sort of going, sidestepping, you know, expectation, you know, anything, but still, you know, very much delivering on what it's setting out to do. You know, if you love that sort of 70s horror kind of vibe, then I think you're going to get a lot out of this. And you know, the fact that, say, it's got that very much that very Welsh identity to it, I think really brings something special.
Absolutely. And okay, so that was The Worm of how did you pronounce that?
I don't know. Welsh. I'm not very good. I'm just sort of saying it as it's spelled. So Welsh Penbarras. Look Penbarras.
Yeah.
Let's say Welsh is like, I swear. I mean, I'm amazed by Welsh. I mean, just the credits on this film were just amazing me. I was like, how? I mean, surely that must be one of the hardest languages in the world. And I think actually Welsh is, as a language, is kind of, from what I've heard, I think it's struggling to survive, you know, because a lot of people just sort of are moving away from using it. So it's kind of, but it'd be interesting, you know, it's so unique, I think, in languages. I like the fact that they've really gone out of their way to make a film in Welsh, you know, to really sort of highlight the language, put all the credits in that language or whatever, you know, not worry about deterring anyone who might think, I think it's bold to us. Craig Williams is the writer director of this one. I'm just having a quick look on what else he's done. This is looks like his debut. As a writer and director, produced a film called Nose Picker. But apart from that, no other credits. So yeah, very bright. Very good start. Yeah.
Okay, so that is all the shorts that we've showcased this week. Any final thoughts, Rich?
So it was really interesting how there was, say, like I was saying at the beginning, how there was a lot of humor running through a lot of these selections. So these selections are the films that have been released on Arrow from February, March, and April. So they tend to release, like, or at least during this period, they release like four a month. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was interesting how watching them in alphabetical order, which was, say, films from different months, how even just doing that, we could see some thematic, familiarities, continuity. I mean, even the last two, The Monkey's Paw was filmed in Wales, I think. So I just thought it was funny that, you know, these two films were released I think they were released at different times, but it wasn't by design that I put them together, but they both got this connection. And the same with Meet Friend and Keith and say the elements of horror, humor and stuff that were put. I thought it was a nice flow. I would definitely, it's an order that I would definitely recommend. I might, if I was customizing the list, I would probably move a couple around to add more, to give more flow. Let's say if we were putting it into releasing it as a film kind of format, you know. But this is 2 hours well spent, you know, really, really, really good selection. A lot of filmmakers I've never seen before. And, you know, always impresses me what people are able to achieve with limited time and resources.
Yeah, I think that's key as well, isn't it? Because, I mean, the longest film here was 35 minutes, and admittedly that had the most sort of structured narrative, I think, because it had so many characters and things, and it was based on an actual sort of story. So it needed that amount of time. Whereas everything else is round about, 10 minutes tops probably.
Averaging around the 10-minute mark.
And they're able to sort of convey a lot of story in that sort of period, which is all very, very interesting.
If you had to pick one to watch again, or pick one of these to say, if you're only going to watch one of them, which one would you say that people should watch?
Probably Bleep. I think Bleep is probably the most accessible, and the humor and everything. I think that works really well. As I said, my favorite is the Worm. But yeah, Bleep and Bark, enjoyed that one for its humor. But yeah, it's a good bunch of, the Anatomy Maestro, I can see myself watching again. The same with Bad Acid, and that those are, the people behind those particular films, I would certainly keep an eye on, because I think, their visual style is very interesting, and it'd be interesting to see what they're going to do next for sure. Anyway, that is our rundown of Arrow's quarter, the first quarter of 2024, their output. I hope you check them out, either by subscribing to the Arrow streaming channel, or keep an eye out on Vimeo and YouTube, where these will inevitably turn up, I'm sure. That is the end of the show. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter, or X, at the DTV Digest, and obviously the Short Shots, where we put together a whole library of shorts that we've curated from various sources, all very entertaining, definitely worth checking out. And I'm sure some of these will find its way onto that list soon as well. Thank you for listening. Tune in again next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.